and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are praying for Raya in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it's been a mixed week on Planet Albion. First, the good news! A second win in a row saw Nottingham Forest go home with nothing after goals from Diego Gomez and Danny Welbeck sent us into the next game with Arsenal full of confidence. Then, the bad news. The wannabe champions turned up and they stunk the place out. Ultimately, we didn't do enough to get anything out of the game, but a combination of Arsenal's time-wasting and yet another inept refereeing performance that allowed it saw to it that it was always going to be an uphill battle. Some positive news though this week is that leading scorer Danny Welbeck has triggered a contract extension that will see him extend his stay by another year. Right, joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Jason Thackeray. Hello, Thackers. How are you?
Hello, guys. Yeah, very good. Well,
we're recording this on the Thursday after the Wednesday of the Arsenal game, and I have no voice. Quite vociferous in my opinions last night, but more of that to come. We're going to start with Forest, Jake, because it was two wins in a row. It kind of changes the narrative, doesn't it?
It does, particularly after Palace, but then losing the two subsequent games, there was definitely an air of sort of depression. And going into that Brentford game, you were just thinking, where's he going to pick the result up from? And he put all the experienced guys out, and he did really well, pick the result out, and then you're looking at the team when it comes in an hour and a quarter before Forest, and it's an unchanged team, and you think, well, yeah, great.
It doesn't happen. It's a very rare move from Fabian, and I'm all for it, frankly. I know Al's got his opinions on it, haven't you, Al? But
I think that a changed team or an unchanged team is largely, especially in modern day football, the whole notion of an unchanged team is, I think, is a little bit of an antiquated thing that is over-egged a little bit. I mean, you play the team you pick the team. Let's put it this way, we no longer have a squad of sort of 16, 17 players of which you pick 12. You now have a squad of up to 25, and that's even then you can go bigger if you've got homegrown talent, yeah, of which you have to pick 18 for the game. Is it 18? No, 20, of which 16 can play. So you have to rotate, or you can rotate a little bit more. And you've got that much more scope to do so. So I'm not that worried about the whole notion of an unchanged team, really.
You've been quite vociferous in that. I mean, I personally, I like an unchanged team, or I like a team where players are able to play regularly together. I mean, it's all very well training together, but you're building up those relationships on the pitch, and that's quite often how you win games, because people understand what's going on. I know you can work all that on in training, but on a match situation, Jace, it's a very different scenario, isn't it?
It is. And I think the other thing that sort of comes into it for me a little bit is, we've beaten Forest and we've beaten Brentford in the reverse fixtures. And
double-double.
We got double-double. And I think we were almost targeting those as winnable games. And when we played so well at Brentford and got the result, he's got to have in his head, well, why change that? They've just done that together for the first, till he made a change at Brentford. Those guys know what they're going to do, and they're playing a similar sort of opponent that we've beaten in the reverse fixture.
Okay, well, we're going to have this conversation again in a minute when we come to the Arsenal team, but that's another story. But the headline news about this team, apart from it being unchanged, was, of course, the fact that there was a certain Mr. S. March on the bench. And let's face it, we're all absolutely thrilled, and even more thrilled to see him come on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. You keep thinking, when's he coming back? When's he coming back? And getting in the squad and then getting in the pitch. And it's one of those team things, even though, sorry, Al, the idea of an unchanged team is quite dull. My phone was pinging off because everyone was going, Solly, 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 exclamation mark.
Well, I mean, you're not going to have the same...
Not a lot of pleased Brighton fans that he was on the bench.
You're not going to have the same 20. I think AD's point is about the unchanged starting 11, which,
Yeah,
like you
yeah,
say,
yeah.
even then it's the start, even the starting 11. Yes, it's important, but it's not the be all and end all. So, you know, so long as, let's face it, certainly early in the season, Hertzler was a bit of a tactical genius when it came to so many subs coming on and scoring. And I don't even know if we still hold the record for the number of subs who've scored a goal this season. So it's all about, and I hate, it's not even game management, it's about player management,
Yeah,
getting the best out of a given situation. So the starting 11 is important. And let's face it, if he's going to have subs at 60 minutes, then, you know, those subs are equally important. If he's only going to do it, like, I think, wasn't it for Brentford, he didn't do anything until about 80 minutes, and he did, it was something not dissimilar for Forrest. I mean, he seems to be leaving them a little bit later at the moment. Solly March only came on for about 7 or 8 minutes, got absolutely clattered. Welcome back to the Premier League, son. But what I would say, and the reason you're mentioning this, it is brilliant to see him back, because I genuinely feared that we weren't going to see him again. Whatever the reason is, and let's face it, none of us are medically trained here. Whatever the reason is that kept him from, I mean, that landing that he had against City that injured him, clearly horrific, clearly heinous. And who know, well, I mean, let's face it, because we're not medically qualified. AD, can you get Malcolm Stewart back, please?
Yeah,
I don't know if he's gone to the toilet. He
I
might have
just gave him a
actually
call.
said, and he'd have had an idea as to, you know, what it was that would have kept him out. Was it, I mean, I don't necessarily go
Well,
down the
I
line of
mean,
bad physios or bad medical thing. I mean, his body is his body.
Solly did talk about it after the game, so I just point everyone in the direction of that interview. But basically, it was fixed, and then he wasn't fixed, and it basically he had to go get fixed again. Is the long short of it. I've just checked this. I don't know if it's true, because but apparently 8 goals scored by substitutes this season for us. But there you
Do
go.
you know if that's a record or not? Don't worry
I
about it
have
if
no
you don't know, but
no idea. But I think we all held our breath a little bit though, Al, when Solly came on, and he did get clattered, because it's like, please get up, please get up.
well, the thing
But
is, it wasn't a clattering that did for him. It's the innocuous things. It's a bit like Tsimas, isn't it? It's the
yeah.
innocuous stuff where not when you well, I was about to say when a player goes down, there's no one near him. But actually, this is Arsenal's tour de force, so let's worry about that later. I was going to say that it's certainly with Tsimas and certainly with March, the way they went down, you could see it was a problem immediately. And you know, it's well with Tsimas, it's the rest of the season. Thankfully, he's young enough that hopefully he'll recover, you know, bigger, better, brighter, that
Yeah.
kind of thing.
Okay.
Solly, on the other hand, he's taken ages to get to the age of 31, hasn't he, Jace?
He's the oldest, youngest 31-year-old I know.
He
If you'd
is.
asked me his age, 31 would have been the last thing I'd guessed.
He looks older than I do, and that's saying something. Okay, well, I mean, one thing I would like to point out about the Forest game, Al, is, you know, I mean, you've got teams that are struggling for their lives down the bottom of the table. Normally, they come and park the bus, but I was actually quite impressed by the fact that Forest did actually come and they actually made a game of it, and it was actually a very entertaining affair.
On some levels, yeah. I mean, having said that, if the likes of Forest are going to attack us the way that, say, the quote Big Six would, I think they're going to come unstuck, and this is where Brighton are the superior side. I mean, as you've pointed out many times, it's the low block, it's the parking the bus, it's the, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's the one that we've always struggled with, and yet we've always done quite well against the teams that, well,
Attackers.
attack us and have no fear to do so. So, you know, and I think that, when it comes to the notion of, you know, Brighton faltering, it's because they still either haven't, I'm going to say they haven't learned. I mean, obviously, it's new players. It's not Brighton have regret. It's new players that come in that haven't learned the trick of how to get through or past those low blocks. But yeah, if Forest are going to have a go at us, then I'd always fancy our chances for that.
But attack we did, and as at Brentford the week before, Diego Gomez opened the scoring with a first time angled drive, I'm calling it, Jay.
He finished with aplomb, didn't he, Abe?
It was I mean,
That was a
well,
plum
having
tree.
watched it again just now, I thought, I mean, when I was watching it live, I thought Sells won't want to see that again, but he did put some egg on it, didn't he?
Oh, he did, yeah. He absolutely creamed it.
I
Along
think
the
that,
ground as well, though. Often when you get
yeah.
Him to an extent, Minty sometimes, Ayari famously, they put some egg on it and it goes over the North Stand, but it was all along
This
the
has still
ground.
not happened, actually, has it? No, no one has still. I mean,
I
apart
might
from
land
Leo
it in the
Ajoa, who
tube
had a
one.
very good go, nobody's quite got a ball out of the ground yet. At some point, it will happen. I am here for that sort of
Oh,
content.
there'll be bus stop parades if someone manages to do that. It'd be brilliant.
Forget a bus stop parade out. Brighton Buses will name a bus after the person who
Now
does it.
they'll name the ball after the one that's sorry ball RIP stuck on roof. No, it was I was actually so surprised with that shot that went in. I mean,
Was early though as well.
I thought it was an attack that was slightly faltering. I mean, they've gone busted down the wing. The defender had made a mistake, and off we went. And then it didn't sort of it kind of stopped and turned round. So when the opportunity came to Gomez, and let's face it, of the was it 10, 11 goals, whatever it is he's got now, most of them have been pretty sexy. So it's not surprising that he'd have done something like that.
Listen,
Having said that, unpopular opinion, and I think if you look at it again, I don't think I'm wrong. He shinned it, but hey, it went in. And yes, he did give it some leather. Well, I'll say some leather. He gave it some bone, and it was beautiful. It was hard and accurate, and therefore you always have a good chance.
Well, one thing, like I said, I've just watched the highlights of it again before we came on air today, and like the commentator, it wasn't our usual chap doing it. He
Wasn't
says
Steve Baker.
he doesn't score tap-ins. I'm like, well, he does,
Well, he scores tap-ins and worldies and nothing in between.
but it was but shortly after that, Jason Forrest did equalise. I mean, it was a great goal, but it's not one we'll want to watch again, is it?
No, it's not. The finish was very, very good, but the setup play was less great from our defenders, shall we say. We were ripped apart fairly easily. I think Wefa was kind of turned, wasn't he, if I remember rightly.
Well,
And
it was
it
a
was
dummy by
nutmeg.
Jesus. He took out two players somehow, and it was like,
Two players.
Well,
because
they
I mean,
did
the
a couple of
first JP.
stepovers. Though they did a couple of stepovers, and Wefa just completely fell for it. He was about the third person it went past, and it nutmegged him completely. And in a performance, and this is, I know where again you and I disagree, but it seemed to be everyone around us was really on Weaver's case. He looked like he'd been in a coffee shop in Amsterdam. There was one time he had the ball, no one was near him, and he just almost fell over and gave it away. There was other times when the defender was beating him with ease. And before actually anyone thinks I'm on his case, I know you want to talk about these things chronologically. I'm just going to put out there, I thought he was absolutely superb against Arsenal. But against Forest, he worried me.
I don't think he was terrible against Forest. I think there was a couple of times where he got caught out of position and caught napping, and that is something that does happen with him. But yeah, there were some nice things that he did as well. So, I mean, you were quite vociferous in your opinion after the game on Sunday. But
I was
hey
doing
ho,
my piece
okay. Well,
about him.
I mean, it was a fantastic finish though, from Gibbs White, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
When it got to him, and like,
Right. Yeah, but it's
sometimes you just
him.
have to hold your hands up and say, yeah, that's a good goal. But they weren't on level terms for very long, and because Danny Welbeck swiveled to restore the lead.
Can I just say, I thought that actually Forest defend, not that I care, the Forest defending for that particular goal, I thought was abysmal. I mean, there was the mistake for the first one, but even then they could have actually sorted themselves out. But for this one, Mitoma went flying down the wing. His cross was absolutely delicious, and I'm afraid to say it's a bit too much of a rarity. If he can put some things in like that in future, because Hinshelwood had managed to pull out to the back post. On his own, again, brilliantly. His cushion header was superb. Yeah, and as the cliche goes, Welbeck still had a lot to do. But this is a seasoned professional, 35 years of age, knew exactly what to do. Shielded the ball from the defenders, turned. It could have cannoned off their legs. It could have gone anywhere. But as you say, AD, don't shoot, don't score. And tucked it in. And for me, that was a genuine striker's goal. There was a touch of the Gary Linekers about that.
You know what? That's exactly what I thought. It was just
Not dissimilar to his goal against West Germany in the semi-final in 1990.
And a lot of the goals he scored, in the hat trick he scored against Poland in the World Cup in 86.
Yeah, and let's face it, that was a fella who did score tap-ins.
I think that's all he ever scored. I don't think he scored anything from outside the box,
No,
did
we
he? But
didn't.
I mean, Jay, it was the same goal scorers as the week before. I mean, obviously, we did have a lot of chances in this game, and us not putting the game to bed is something that was, it did bug me. I mean, Mitoma had that chance where he should have made it free. Hinch had that diving header, didn't he? And like Gross had a free kick. So, we just keep inviting the pressure on late on as well, and that's something that really annoys me. But going back, but you know, it's nice to have the symmetry of having the same two goal scorers, right?
Yeah, nice touch to have to say the symmetry. I completely agree with you with about taking our chances. It's one of those things that people have said about us this season under Hertzler that we tend to have a good 45 minutes and a bad 45 minutes. Sometimes I think it's just because we're sitting back because all those chances that you mentioned, I think, were in the first half. I don't think we had a good chance in the second half.
There was the gross free kick was the second
The
half.
gross free kick was the second half, that's right. But other than that, we was kind of invited them on and soaked up the pressure a little bit.
I think you're being a little bit harsh. Well, I mean, there were chances we could have done better with, but I mean, if you're going to criticise Hinshelwood for his diving header, one, I haven't seen a diving header like that for ages, and I think it was brilliant the way we did. And I've actually noticed in the last two or three games, when he has been playing, and he's been playing in more of a number 10 role, which I think personally is it, I prefer him. I'd rather have Milner or Belieber in that position, as in the, sorry, in the defensive position, with Hinshelwood a bit further up. But I've also noticed that a lot of the crosses that are coming in are aimed at Hinshelwood. The only thing is, at the moment, in the last two games, he's been a bit of a 50p head. So it's. But it's kind of an interesting tactic that I think Hertzler's there's he had several chances against Arsenal. Sorry, yes, I know we're going to come back to it. But he had several chances against Arsenal, and they were with his head. But the point is, the you know the winning goal was created by a very nicely cushioned downward header to Hinshelwood, or from Hinshelwood to Welbeck. So, like I say, the diving header, if that would have gone in, that would have been. It wouldn't have been goal of the season, but just think what a return to the golden era of players
Yeah,
putting their heads where it can hurt.
but I mean, it would have. I mean, if any one of those chances were taken, and I mean, the Hinch one was the hard one, and it was a good save, to be fair. And it was a good save for the Mitoma one. But Mitoma really, really should have finished that, I think. But
Yeah, I think what it was is it was his touch. It wasn't as much of the finish. I mean, the keeper did come out and smother it, but I think the point that you haven't quite that you haven't made there is that because his touch took him, it's the fine margins. If it was 6 inches closer to him, he'd have had a better chance of controlling the dink, for want of a better word. But I won't say he was stretching, but he didn't have the total control over the shot that he'd have wanted.
I mean, Jason, it is something we've seen a lot this season. I mean, if you consider what was the goal of the season last season, where Carew's control and touch just took him away from the player before, it was just like seamless. But his touch does seem to be a little bit off still this season.
Yeah, it does. He seems to be a little bit off, and we'll come on to it. But the way he was hobbling and then taken off against Arsenal, I wonder if he's been playing with an injury because his finishing, his first touch is just, it's not quite been there. And if you're just half a yard off because you haven't got that flexibility that he had, you'll notice it at the Premier League level.
Let me answer that one for you. He got absolutely clattered at the end of the first half. That's what did for him.
Okay. All right, well, I mean, there was a couple of other nice little bits. It was like I really enjoyed Joel Veltman doing a Lewis Dunk impression with a little, nice little chest back in the
They're
last
all
minute.
into that now, aren't
Yeah.
they? But
I think
yeah,
Dan's been teaching them in training.
but
Special
it just
sessions.
you know if it, I do not understand. Every club does it, so it's not just us. But and obviously Forest are pushing for an equaliser, but. Rather than just inviting the pressure on, get the ball and keep the ball and take it up the other end of the pitch, pass it around at the other end of the pitch, keep it away from our goal, please. That's all I ask. I don't want the heart attack.
Take it into the corner flag.
Yeah, please, just stop inviting the pressure.
It's
It comes all hands to the pump. Keystone Cops. Ball can go anywhere. And the amount of goals we concede from that is just insane. But
what two I can think of this year.
I can think of more than two. But anyway,
No, in the
okay. Well,
last
you.
minute. No, hang on. In the last minute, there was Fulham and there was Everton. Who else was there? In the last minute, in the last, say, 6 months. Because
I'll
if
come back
anything, it's
to.
us that's been equalising. Where we've been playing quite well, we've been 1-0 down. I think Bournemouth was it, West Ham, scoring in the last minute. So, as you say, I know you're talking about something else. We do it. We're not the only ones who do it.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And this show, Al, is brought to you in association with the wonderful Flowers Unlimited.
I'm
And
glad you told
apparently,
me that.
well, no, I'm telling you now, and apparently, it's Mother's Day coming up.
Yes, I'm one of those chaps, I'm afraid to say that has to pass, has passed it by for the last 26 years. But yeah, so Dave Costa of Flowers Unlimited, official floral sponsor of Brighton and Hove Albion, and official sponsor of the Albion Roar. What a nice chap. His shop is at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, where you can get all sorts of goodies. You can get flowers, chocolate, champagne, anything that says "I love you very much," or you could actually say, "Here's my sarcastic bunch of flowers, Mikel." So you can go to flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk online should you wish to do so, or head over to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. If you tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, hey, you get 20% discount. So that's not a 20% discount of your mother, it's 20% discount off the present for her. And it being
And
Mother's Day fast rapidly approaching, we have a competition in association with Flowers Unlimited. So for a chance to win a lovely gift of a bouquet of flowers up to the value of £50 and a £15 box of chocolates for you to give to your mother or someone else's mother if you're that way inclined.
mother-in-law.
Simply answer this question. What street in Hove is Flowers Unlimited on? What street in Hove is Flowers Unlimited on? If you think you know the answer, do drop us an email. The Albion Roar at yahoo.co.uk. That's the Albion Roar at yahoo.co.uk with your answer. And what we'll do is, with a deadline of 5 p.m. Tuesday, March the 10th, we'll pick a random winner from all the correct answers and let you know. We appreciate this is a bit of a short notice competition, but Mother's Day is approaching rapidly, and we have done our show later this week than normal.
It
So
is on
just
the
to
15th of March, just in case you had one that
it's
weren't
Sunday the
there.
15th of March. It is. I do apologise for not mentioning that. So the question is, what street is Flowers Unlimited in Hove? Give us your answer to the Albion Roar at yahoo.co.uk, and we will pick the winner on next week's show. And good luck to you.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton, Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Now, Jason, on Wednesday, I was feeling pretty confident. I mean, I've 2 wins in a row. I thought, we've got our mojo back. We're playing with a little bit of pizzazz again, a little bit of flair, and I was quietly confident going into this game. Arsenal will have been ultimately gettable. Obviously, that draw they had at Wolves, and they're basically not picking up as many points as well, and obviously they are champions elect, but it's like I thought we had a really good opportunity to get something out of this game. So at final whistle, when it eventually went, I was very disappointed, and there was a lot of reasons for that. Where would you like to start?
Rage, disappointment, lack of voice, copious swearing, banging of things as I went out of the stand, and good half
I've
hour
always
rant.
found that punching concrete walls is a good idea, Jace.
No, it's, I mean, honestly, where do you start? Because I wasn't, I wouldn't say I was unconfident, but I never think that there's a divine right to beat the team at the top of the table. They're top
Absolutely.
of the table
Yeah,
for a
absolutely.
reason.
Well, let's start in that case the day before with Fabian Hürzler's press conference about how he felt Arsenal's behaviour was. What did you make of that in the first instance?
What did I make of it?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was a bit of psychology. I think he was trying to get the referee to pick up on it. I think he was trying to get in their minds a little bit. But I think the other thing, I think he's done it successfully. He's built a bond with the fans where there's been a slight disconnect, particularly after the Palace game. I think he said something that a lot of us were thinking of, ultimately.
Did you agree with him though?
Yes.
Without swearing. Oh, you did. Thank you.
Yes, I did.
So with that in mind, and we can talk about the individual bits and pieces. With that in mind, and all that Fabian felt was going to happen. One, in your mind, did it happen? I mean, what I mean by that is specifically what he was talking about, not any other considerations. And two, we have to sort of talk about it. What can be done about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been discussing this on North Stand Chat for as of today, to be honest with you. And with the guys in the bar afterwards as well. Yes, it came to pass. They wasted time. The referee did very little about it. The fourth official didn't say to him, "Oh, mate, you're in charge of this game." I think their first team talk was on 31 minutes when someone went down for a spurious injury because we were getting on top of them, even though they'd scored. They were negative, diving, cheeked, basically. So it fully
I
came
just hope
to
that I hope their solicitor's not listening.
pass.
Well, look, I mean, here's the thing, right? I mean, obviously, I mean, a manager's job is to win football matches. That's the end of it. But when you look at that Arsenal team, right? They've got a lot of talent, a lot of flair, a lot of outstanding performance in that team, and yet the manager sent them out to play like this. I mean, if they are to win the league, and it's looking quite likely. That does not make them worthy champions in my book. I mean, they're basically cheating their way. I mean, there was a stat that has been posted on social media today, and it what is I don't know if you've seen it, but how long it took Arsenal to restart play in total, but it was 30
30 minutes.
minutes and 51 seconds.
Yeah, it was 30 minutes. It was
Now that's
game.
for a game that was at 100 minutes, effectively,
Now,
wasn't it?
but now basically, that's out of a 90 minutes game. That's a third of it that they've that and basically going to football is not cheap, particularly going to watch a team at the Emirates, going to watch that, when you're paying upwards of £100 for a ticket, you're robbing your own fans of football, and they want to see the likes of Eze take on a player. They want to see Bakary Saka doing that running on taking people on. They want to see Odegaard pinging the balls around, just
Okay.
falling over and cheating. It's just cheating.
It is just cheating. So 100%. And here's something I said, and I'll try and repeat it word for word. When you're a youngster and you start playing football, I've done this coaching Owen's team. What do kids do when they get a football at their feet? They want to dribble past their mates. They want to nutmeg them. They want to play up front. They want to score a hat trick. They want to do all the skills. If you tell
Yeah.
them, "I'm going to tell you what you're going to have to do is run hard, stay in shape, wrestle someone at a corner and fall over every 5 minutes," I'd take another sport up. Where's the joy for these players? The players can't enjoy it.
I mean, this is take you know you're taking at the point I was going to make sort of a little bit further there. That's exactly it. I'm just wondering how many of these players are actually enjoying what they're doing. They're enjoying winning. They're enjoying being top of the table in one of Europe's most prestigious football leagues. But are they enjoying doing the things that they would probably that they you know 10, 15 years ago, they're doing things that they didn't go into football for? I suppose probably when you're a youngster, you learn how to play football. But then there's a difference between learning how to play football and learning how to win. And there are various different ways of winning, which any given coach slash psychologist will tell you you can do this, this, and this. So this actually then goes on to your point you were saying, AD, is like you say, there's the amount of talent that's there, irrespective of how much they cost. That's a red herring. But the amount of talent that team has, and they're told actually not to use it and to use it in other aspects of their personality, which, again, like I say, will not be in necessarily in their DNA unless it gets taught to them as professionals. I mean, and along those lines, I'm actually really glad that Hertzler came out and said what he said after the game is, I will not do that. Now, does that mean he's actually denying his team success? Who knows? But then we're back to the whole Clough and Revy thing of Brian Clough accusing Leeds United of being dirty and cheating their way to the to the titles. Does, you know, it's a point of, do you want the pots and pans and the tinkers and the cups and the trophies, or do you want the legacy? Because sometimes they don't necessarily go hand in hand.
Yeah, well, we've seen this from Arsenal before. I mean, it's not unusual. I mean, you look back to the George Graham team, 1-0 to the Arsenal. That was, I mean, but it was a different time, right?
I think you've also got is the nature of the way that the referees can look after the game. And this is another point I was making last night, is that, bear with me here, it's always said, and you'll agree with this, Jace, that the best referees are the ones you don't notice, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yep, so agree. That's fine. And that can only ever work when you've got two sets of teams who are playing a competitive, keenly fought, relatively clean game. That, you know, they're not charging in, they're not in the referee's face, they're not moaning about absolutely everything, they're just getting up and getting on with the game. And it's not a new malaise, and again, you see football in the 70s and the players, sometimes they get clattered to the floor, but they just get up and get on with it. The referee's given the free kick, he's not going to change his mind, etc, etc. But in this instance, you've got a thing where the players' behaviour is there unchecked. And IFAB can have their rules and the Premier League can have their rules, and they last for 5 minutes and then we're back to where we were. So that what it does then, it brings the referee into the equation. It's like the players are dragging the referee into the, yes, you're a theoretically an independent arbiter. You don't always get it right, but as a human, we'll accept and acknowledge that. But what we're actually going to do is now bring you in on our tactics. And we're going to do this, this, and this, and it's up to you to decide what to do about it, as opposed to the referee saying, you lot, pack it in, cut it out, grow up, play the game. So it's like the managers have told the players to get the referee involved in the game, and the referee therefore doesn't have a chance in hell of trying to just officiate the game. He's got to officiate the behaviour of some petulant people. The fact that then so many of these referees, who were not incidentally trained to necessarily do this, they were trained to officiate the laws of the game, not to deal with petulant children, are not necessarily trained to do it. And with that in mind, it's not as though I'm not blaming Chris Kavanagh. It was Chris Kavanagh, the ref, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
It's not as though I'm not blaming it, but he knows what's going on. And therefore, at the very least, you know, PG Moll is not being proactive. And it's, to be honest, I don't think it's even being reactive. It's just, it's like the referees are officiating a game from 25, 30 years ago that doesn't hold sway now, because the rules allow stoppages for head injuries. They allow for this, this, and, you know, players having drinks breaks and so on. And, you know, the managers therefore take a fuller advantage of it. And from that, we see delays and tactics. And effectively, yes, the time gets added on, but it's almost like an in-house or an in-game timeout, which football is not supposed to have.
No, yeah. I mean, but I mean, Chris Kavanagh, again, I mean, I said it in the intro. I mean, he allowed this to go on, and there was, I mean, he didn't have a great game anyway, regardless of Arsenal's time wasting. But we'll come to that in a minute.
But my point is, it's not just him. It is the nature of, it's almost like the policy of PG Moll is you get on with it, because there's no sanction for it.
Well, this is what I propose. I'm going to fix football. I'm going to fix the cheating.
Because this will be good.
Here we go. Basically,
Jace, buckle in.
It's a very, very simple. Well, you know that thing where a stop clock's right twice a day?
Yeah.
That's what we're going to have. We're going to have a stopped clock. We're going to take the timing of a football match out of the hands of the referee. And basically, we're going to have a stop clock system. The ref is not in control of the time that's added on. Every time the ball was out of play, the clock is stopped and it restarts again when the ball is back in play. That way, you're getting 90 minutes of football that you've paid for, unlike the 60 minutes that Arsenal fans are paying for. And it's, you know, it happens in other sports. I think rugby league have that system, don't they? Where it's the referee isn't in charge of the...
Rugby union does as well.
Yeah.
With rugby union, the time is up, but if the ball is still in play, you carry on. And I think it's the same in league. But if you're talking about sort of like a hooter going off and the ball's in mid-flight on the way to the top corner, good luck with getting through that one.
Well, you know, it's...
But that, also, I think that if you're also talking about having, you know, a stopping and starting clock every time the ball goes out of play, and let's face it, not even rugby does that, but if you are talking about that, then 90 minutes is going to be too long, because effectively you're talking about players being out there for 2.25 hours, and that, for a season, is just not going to work. Well, so you'd have to reduce it to sort of 60, 65 minutes, whatever it might be. Like I say, I mean, every single game, just because the players cannot run around for the manic time in a manic way they need to for 90 minutes. They stop and have a breather. There's a goal kick. They'll take a moment, but just because they physically have to, they're not that superhuman. So,
it would start off like maybe like a chaos, and you might end up being there for 2 hours instead of 90 minutes, but it would stop because the throw-ins would be taken quicker, corners would be taken quicker, free kicks would be taken quicker.
I disagree, because if the clock is stopped for the ball going out, where's the demand for a player to then take it back in quickly and think, well, the clock isn't running, so I might as well take my time. So you see, it's already
There's flaws in my. I don't work for IFAB. They can.
You
sort
just said
this
you're
out.
Gonna, you just said you've put foot yeah. into rights.
Well, let me go into IFAB and I will sit down with my stop clock idea. And I'm basically. I mean, yeah, you're right. Throw-ins, not necessarily unless it's taken in 30 seconds. Then
I was about to say if there can be if you're going to do that, then at the very least have a timer by which you get something like 15 seconds after the ball gets into your hand or 30 seconds after it's gone out of play, it must be thrown in or it goes to the other team.
Look, it's not a perfect... I mean, there are ways of sorting it out. And like,
but the referee has plenty to do, so you need a secondary timekeeper.
So I had another idea. And I've put this out there, and it's fairly simple. It might not stop the time wasting on corners and throw-ins and everything, but if you want to stop those ad hoc timeout team talks, if a player goes down injured for treatment, then every player on his team must retreat to their own half or the centre circle.
Yeah.
And the coach must stay in the technical area, and anyone not doing so gets a booking.
I think that's reasonable. I mean, I said something similar a few weeks ago on here, and I said, well, if the players want a water break, then put the water bottles on the other side of the pitch.
Yeah.
If they absolutely have to. And then you realise, I mean, you know, Arsenal weren't even subtle about it. Let's face it, they're not the only team to do it. People are talking about Liverpool and City doing it, and I'm not so sure. I'll take their word for it. I haven't necessarily. I think it was classically Southampton about 3 or 4 years ago. You could set your own watch by it.
I'm a classic. I will give you Brian Gruder, who was also doing it, and unlike the Arsenal fans, we were calling him out on it and saying no, well, that is embarrassing.
Well, actually, what he was doing is throwing himself to the floor as opposed to going down arbitrarily. Yeah. It's almost like, right, whose turn is it to go down? Right, there's no one outfield, so keeper, what was it? I think it's the point our friend Vicky made on our WhatsApp group. He made a save with his right arm and then starts clutching his left. And you think,
well, that's exactly it. That's what I was going to say. What would you do with a goalkeeper who clutches the wrong shoulder?
Show him a mirror.
Isn't it? Really? It's simulation. It should be a booking.
Yeah, it's a bit like a player going off. It's a bit like a player going off with a shoulder injury, but limping.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, we're all talking about the narratives of these things, and obviously, we're all incredibly frustrated by the whole thing. But I mean, ultimately, we didn't do enough to win the game. But the narrative could have changed massively had Carlos Baleba has scored when he should have done in the first minute.
Yeah, he should have scored. And this is one of the things I think you, me and Shandy were discussing at half-time, really, is the fine margins of a Premier League game. You know, Baleba gets that golden chance, really should score, doesn't score. 2 minutes later, he's deflected a fluke shot through and wrong-footed for Bruggen. At the time, I thought Bart just had a ricket let through his legs, but he doesn't. It comes off Belieba, who's about a yard in front of him.
I still think that Bart could have done a lot better with that, because it's like...
Well, if there's a deflection, that's a yard away, then no, he hasn't got a chance.
He's there, but he's not there. He's preparing for where the ball's going to land and not where Belieba deflects it. And it does deflect it very far, but it's enough.
But it's the fact that the deflection took a lot of pace off the ball as well. And it's like...
Yeah, but is it... I mean, I haven't seen the replay. I'm just doing this from memory. You said a yard, it might be two, but the point is that at that time, you've got nanoseconds to react. And sometimes you're lucky and it sticks.
Yeah, I watched the replay because I was going to have a rant about Verbruggen on social media and then didn't. I watched it. And from the back of the goal, Belieba is the final defender in front of Verbruggen.
Yeah. But I mean, you know what? That was Arsenal's first shot of the game, and their second shot didn't come until the 86th minute. Yeah.
And that was offside.
It wasn't.
It wasn't offside.
It wasn't.
What was going on?
I watched it again last night, and we were adamant, and we were quite vociferous about how adamant we were that he was clearly 20 yards offside, but apparently, looking at it again, he was on. He kind of just ran.
So, in that case, well done, Bart, because, you know, that would have stood.
Yeah. If that had stood at the time,
but the point is that VAR, that's one of those where VAR would have checked it to the nth degree. And if they'd have still, don't get me wrong, if they're still given it, then it doesn't mean to say it wasn't offside. It's because it's Arsenal and there's a big difference.
But there was plenty of other offsides they got horribly wrong in the game. But I mean, one thing that really ground my gears was, Jake, was something that happened in the 30th second of injury time, where Martinelli brings down Wiether in the penalty box. It should have been a penalty. It's a clear foul. There was no attempt by Martinelli to do anything other than to foul Wiether. Wiether did not go down easily. It should have been a penalty. It did get checked by VAR, but apparently there was no clear and obvious error, which is why it wasn't.
Was an obvious error. That's the point.
Yeah, but then what happened? What happened next was the ref blew the whistle for half time, where he should have carried. There was another 2.5 minutes to play.
Well, did he actually stop the game for a VAR?
He stopped the game from a VAR check, and basically then he blew his final whistle after the VAR check.
Yeah, I know. There are a number of things that Chris Kavanagh did last night that I didn't agree with either at the time or now. That's definitely one of them. That's right up there. I don't get this whole... Sometimes it's a clear and obvious error that they come in for. Sometimes they're refereeing the game. Sometimes they'll give a handball when the guy's a yard away and it's poked off the end of his elbow. And sometimes they won't give it when he's 5 yards away because his arm's in a supposedly natural position. And half the ground are saying that's a penalty and the other half are saying it isn't. I genuinely do not get why there's no consistency when they intervene.
I mean, this is the point. Was it something, and there is a big difference here, so we have to be careful. Was it a case that the referee said no penalty, or was it the case that the referee didn't give an opinion? Now, there is a difference at which point VAR intervene. Because if Chris Kavanagh actually said, I saw the incident and I'm not giving a penalty, versus I didn't see it, there's a difference. So do you happen to... I mean, is there any way of knowing either of us?
Unless we hear the audio from PG Marl, then I don't think we're going to know. But I mean, sure. The bottom line is,
the point I'm making is, if he didn't see it, then it's not a clear and obvious error because a decision wasn't made.
No.
So that's a big difference.
It's clear and obvious error that he didn't see it, because he should be in position to see it.
Well, no, sometimes there's just so much going on, you know, especially usually watching the line of the ball. And let's face it, it was pretty much off the ball. You know, the referee can't see everything. The linesmen, I think, are told not to give fouls unless they're right under their nose. And even then, they don't bother. It just seems to be an arbitrary use of the rules. Now, the only thing we ever ask for, and I've said this several times on here, the only thing we ask for is for a referee to be consistent during the game. Now, because the referees are different for every game, and the laws do say that it's in the opinion of the referee, then, you know, that's what they're there for. They might be right, they might be wrong, but in the opinion of the game. But so long as they're consistent throughout that game, because the next referee might have a slightly different opinion as to the severity of a foul or what is a foul, that kind of thing. And we didn't get that clearly.
Did you notice, because I think this is possibly demonstrating consistency for Chris Kavanagh, one of the things I got annoyed about amongst many in the first half, there were two instances where Arsenal were attacking down our right, and the player who was off the ball, in not the left-back position, but inside the left-back, was knocked over, and he didn't give a foul on either occasion. So it's like that contact off the ball he was ignoring all night.
Again, did he see it? Therein lies a point. Did he see it? If he can't see it, he can't give it. But then there were a couple of other times where Arsenal were clattering us off the ball. I mean, this is another thing that I've noticed on kickoff these days, is the ball might go back to the goalkeeper straight from the kickoff person. And there's always an attacker who's on the either side of the centre circle trying to get towards them. And there will be players who will run across them to impede the run. And it's almost as common as the pushing and shoving you get at a corner. But in this instance, the point you're making here, Jay, is the same thing's happening, but when it's in the live game and everything's a bit faster, a bit more hurly-burly, there's a lot more clattering. And I'd say there were some free kicks that were given, I think on both sides, for those kind of off-the-ball incursions. But having said that, I do like the fact that Arsenal players then like to make out they can fly by throwing their arms out wide to see if they can take off.
Well, I mean, we all know that there was a lot of time wasting, and Arsenal's negative tactics has left us all with a bad taste in the mouth. But one thing I will say is, it was, despite us not being able to get that goal back, it was a very good performance by the
team. We totally bossed it.
There was a couple of, we had chances to equalise. I mean, there was that header that Rifa have from Minte's cross, which is just, he just didn't get any power on it. He connects to that properly. That's a goal. And your favourite, Jay, we got an appearance from Yankuba Minte, who was excellent when he came on.
Back to the old Minte. I think, firstly, I agree with the point at the start of that we were excellent in general. I think the players gave the proverbial 110%. They didn't leave a bead of sweat out there. So they played for the manager last night, which is good to see after a couple of the earlier performances.
Arsenal are very good at defending, aren't they?
Arsenal are very good at defending. Like I say, if you want a team that's going to stay in shape, run hard, be niggly, throw themselves around everywhere and wrestle you off the ball at a corner, Arsenal are your team. They're really good at it.
It's something else that Herzl has said a couple of weeks ago about possibly we should contemplate, we might have been this week, contemplate the notion of us playing a bit more dirty. Now, I don't think he means as in sort of like late two-footed thigh-high lunges that are career wreckers. I don't think he means that. But just being a bit cuter, possibly indulging in the Veltman-like dark arts. And let's face it, Veltman is a wind-up merchant supreme. I'm going to put him even above Neil Morpay on that line. I mean, Morpay can, you know, whatever the gag about winding someone up is, that's Morpay. But Veltman does that in a lovely, subtle way, but nonetheless, just as vicious. Even the little thing, like when the chest back you were talking about earlier against Forest, and there were some Forest fans screaming for handball, but clearly it wasn't. You know, he just turns to the crowd and gave him a sign, calm down, you know, sort of, you know, learn the rules or shut up kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think they should build him a statue. And I think the statue should be of him kicking Declan Rice in the shin with the referee in the background.
Well, we had that again last night, didn't we? There was an Arsenal player that went down in the box very dramatically. Veltman tried to pull him up.
Yes.
I think it was him. It was near the end.
Was that Havertz?
No. I think it was Eze. I could be wrong, but I think it was Eze. He went down like a sack of potatoes. Clearly looking for it. I mean, to give Kavanagh his credit, I mean, there are other referees that would have given them just because. So for every Arsenal fan that grizzles and whines about, oh, we never get anything, sorry, you are the referee's pussycat. Sorry, another thing we have to mention of the things where Kavanagh didn't do his job, and I'm certain this is the case, so I'm setting myself up for looking a dick again, is we had a free kick and we tried to take it quickly. Now, I know it hit one of our players, but also it hit one of theirs. So it doesn't actually matter if it hit one of ours. It's not as though you then play on. The player has to be 10 yards away and the referee went, no, play on. Doesn't work that way. If it hits a player who wasn't 10 yards away the moment the free kick was taken, doesn't matter how far the ball's travelled, you retake it. It's page one stuff.
Well, about 3 or 4 minutes after that, they got a free kick and Kavanagh shooed all our players away, had a word with Pascal Gross and marched him off 10 yards before he let them take it. Again,
there's a reason I sound like this today, Jay.
Can I just say also, as with Pascal Gross as the stand-in captain, I'm sad that he had to do it, but I'm really glad that he kept chirping at Kavanagh. Now, it's not something I like to see because, again, you just want the referees and the players to get on with the game. But when you realise that Kavanagh is clearly not refereeing fairly, I'm glad that Gross was there to stand up for his team, for his players. I mean, in the way that Dunk would have done, believe me, but...
Well, we're speaking of Lewis Dunk. He was absent from this game and his place was taken by Olivier Bascali. And you were very impressed by his performance, Al.
I was. And let's face it, I could be wrong. He doesn't come across as I don't think he's the tallest defender. It's either that or just his stature is that of a weeble. I don't know. But
he's not very tall.
Okay, thank you.
We were discussing
right, not me.
Thank you on the way to the game.
It's a bit like, I think it's a bit like AD thinking that Matt Ryan was about 5'9", that kind of
thing.
I mean,
he is very tall, but for a centre-back in the Premier League, he's not very tall.
No, I'm with you. Okay, but he looked confident. I mean, he looked sound. I thought, in fact,
like
all of the back... I thought all the back four were really good. I mean, I know that Saka scored his moody goal, but I thought Kadioglu kept him quiet. And considering that Saka is someone who can be dangerous, even if he hasn't been so much this season... Yeah. I thought Kadioglu, who incidentally is, I think, so far this season, and there's about a quarter of the season left, he's probably not my player of the season, but he's certainly in the top three.
I think when it comes up, he will be certainly up there for consideration.
I think so.
Okay, well, look, I mean, we left the game with nothing. We haven't got a game this weekend, so we can, patch up our injured players and get them fit for the trip to Sunderland next weekend. But we move on. So, but one of the players, he didn't start against his former team, which I was very annoyed about because I think we would have won if he'd have started the game because Georgie did not have a good game. But Danny Welbeck, Jason, was he triggered an extension. So he will be around for another year. And I'm delighted for him.
Oh, I'm delighted for him. I think every Brighton fan should be. I mean, he's our top scorer, isn't he, this season again?
Yeah, double figures for the second time in his career.
Figures, yeah.
The first time being last season.
Yeah, exactly. When he plays, we just look so much better because we've got a fulcrum. We've got a proper nine. You think he's going to finish? You think he's going to hold the ball up? Exactly. Jorginho, I feel genuinely sorry for. He gets stick, but he's not a number nine. It's not his game. He keeps dropping deep. He doesn't really have good hold up play, and he wants to beat people and tends when he's the frontmost player to just run into blind alleys because he's got no support.
It's frustrating but I think I kind of thinking that, okay, if you're trying to do that and you're realizing it's not working, now it could be down to the manager, but obviously the player has to make their decisions when and on the pitch. Surely when you realize that, it's the, what is it? The definition of madness, isn't it? When you're trying something for the nth time and realizing it's not coming off. That's a bad description but whatever the description of madness is. It is frustrating, but sorry, getting back to Danny Welbeck, his career is the Benjamin Button of footballers. Because let's face it, as a youngster, yes, he did well, played for England and so on, but forever injured. And in relative terms these days, it's not as though we've missed him. I'm really bucking for a bolt of lightning here, I know, but these days he's rarely out of the team due to injury. He's not out for 6 weeks at a time. If he's not playing, it's because he clearly can't do 90 minutes week in, week out. So he's used accordingly. Yes, he could do with some help. I'm not sure what's going on with Kostoulas, but I am delighted. It's not just his skill and tenacity, it's his experience. And I think that certainly Hertzler holds a lot of, the club generally holds a lot of store by that. Obviously, we've got Gross that's here till the end of next season. I can see James Milner getting another year. Lewis Dunk will carry on until he drops dead. And so it's, well, you know, Dad's army is alive and kicking.
Yeah, no, they all are. Just one more thing on Welbeck before we talk about the rest of Dad's army, because I think it's now a truism. People used to associate him as that Arsenal, Man United and England player that's come to Brighton for a couple of seasons and will probably get injured all the time. He, in my mind, is a Brighton player and who, you know, had a couple of seasons with Arsenal and Man United. Mm. And he's as Brighton as we are, as far as I'm concerned.
He was just practising, wasn't he?
He was just practicing, and Owen and I at Wolves away, we must have been in Celebrity Corner because we had Kieran Maguire in front of us and Danny Welbeck's family behind us, and they're absolutely lovely people, and they're fully supportive of the club as well. So he's clearly bought into it.
Was it now 6 years? Well, by the end of next season, his contract is up with, what, 7 seasons with us? I lose track. It's either 6 or 7. It's the longest he's spent at any one club, and he's scored the most goals while at Brighton as well. So, yeah,
he's closing in on 50 goals now.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Jace. He, you know, the whole thing of him playing for Arsenal, Man United, it's because he played for them that he got to play for England, but he's actually a better player now.
Yeah.
And it's just he plays for Ickle Brighton. If he was playing as well as he does now for one of the, quote, big six, he would be going to the World Cup.
Well, he might be going to the World Cup.
Yeah, he still might be, but he's less of a shoo-in than if he was at one of the big six. I mean, that's my point.
I mean, Fabian was saying the other day that he's still very much on Tuchel's radar, and he feels that he knows exactly what he can do, and he doesn't necessarily need to call him up for these games before the World Cup, but there's a very good chance he will get in the squad because he knows what he can do.
Well, here's the thing, right? We were watching... We watch some German football every now and again, my son and I, and we watched the Dortmund-Bayern Munich game, and Harry Kane scored, and I think the commentator said he's got 44 goals in all competitions this season. So that makes him an absolute shoo-in to get a metatarsal injury 2 weeks before the World Cup. And the Sun newspaper get their prayer mats out, and out flies Danny at the last minute, saves the day and wins the World Cup. How about that?
Well, at the very least, Harry Kane's going to need some backup, isn't he? So...
And I can't see, there's not really another player that's actually in form at the moment. I mean, there was talk of Calvert-Lewin at one point.
Ollie Watkins isn't exactly
pulling up any trees.
At the moment, he's got to get back into form. Unless he's playing us, then he looks quite good.
Yeah, quite. Now, I take your point. I still think it's just because it's genuinely because he plays for Brighton that's really going to sort of the thing that's going to hold him back. If he was at one of the big six, he'd be there automatically.
Okay. Well, I mean, that is all we've got time for this week. But just before we do go, a quick reminder that we do have a competition for you this week, and that is to win flowers from Flowers Unlimited. What is that question again, Al?
Yeah, so to have a chance of winning a bouquet of flowers and a nice box of chocolates, just tell us what street Flowers, our sponsor Flowers Unlimited, is on in Hove. And send your answer to thealbionraw@yahoo.co.uk. And good luck.
And that's it. And we'll be back with to announce the winner next week. But until then, thank you very much to Jason Thackeray. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham, and this has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. I'm off to get some tunes, and I'll see you later. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Be a poet, I wouldn't need to worry. I could be a teacher in a classroom full of scholars. I could be the sergeant in a squadron full of wallets. What a waste. 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 Because I chose to play the fool in a sixpence band. First nine nerves, every one night stand. I should be glad to be so inclined. What a waste, what a waste. What a waste, what a waste. What a waste. Stratagems and bruises. I could be a doctor with poultices and bruises. I could be a writer with a growing reputation. I could be the ticket man at Fulham Broadway Station. What a waste. What a waste. What a waste. What a waste. Because I chose to play a fool in a six-piece band. First night nerves, every one-night stand. I should be glad to be so inclined. What a waste, what a waste. Rock and roll don't mind. Sparks the revolution. I could be an inmate in a long-term institution. I could do the wild extremes. I could do or die. I could yawn and be withdrawn and watch them gather fire. What a waste. What a waste. What a waste. What a waste. What a waste, rock and roll don't mind.